Hello, this is recording number 7 of Gary Gygax's Saga of Old City, an annotated reading. All right, well, we're on chapter 5. We're getting near the end of it. I'm going to start here on page 51. It is the last paragraph. They approached the entrance to the passageway. One on either side, just as a wounded thief came limping out, trying to get away. He ignored the boys for a second, seeing only curious urchins rather than dangerous foes. Just in time he saw a sand's blade darting forward. The man fended off the attack with an easy motion of his own weapon, a dagger as long and nearly as thick as a sword, and in so doing knocked sand to the ground. As the thief turned and crouched to stab San, Gord's blow to the left side of his neck took him by complete surprise. The knife bit deep, and the man spun, trying to nail his new attacker, but it was too late. A heartbeat later, he fell forward dead. The boys quickly dragged the body back into the darkness of the passageway, where some conflict still raged. Wisely, the two opted to strip the dead thief rather than attempt to mix it up in the confused melee near the middle of the passage. Gord took the thief's dagger and a ring from his finger. Sand searched for purse and pocket contents. Thereafter, both crouched near the corpse, waiting to see what would transpire. Commotion ended with the thud of a body falling heavily onto the stones of the gangway. Break. All right, well, we're joining here right in the middle of an action scene. We get to see how the thief-beggar war is it's starting up in full form here. And we see that the wounded thief is still able to fend off the most neophyte blow from San, the 10-year-old, whereas Gord is able to dart forward and get a killing blow in, showing, I think, the relative difference here between how San is still at that stage, somewhere, below where how advanced Gord is. Gord getting a little benefit there from his natural abilities. Immediately the both of them know what to do, stripping the dead. There isn't really anything campaign specific except to give you a little atmosphere of what these melees would be right here. Gord is able to lift a dagger and a ring, and whether that has any kind of, connotation later on, I don't really remember myself. So we have a description of the confused melee near the middle of the passage, but really this is all here to give you an idea of how combat in the a novelized combat is when you have the game combat and the novelized combat. You have to look at things in a little bit different a way. And yet I think Gygax is still trying to keep the concepts of the leveled combat fighting and hit points. I think he's still trying to show that they are, how they are expressed, how they actually work out, if you want to bring it into a description where, even something like Sans Miss may be more of something that draws down the hit points in the simulated combat, where it's not really blow for blow in D&D. But here we have the end of the action scene, and we have that there is the stones of the gangway, which basically just describes the area of the alley and the outer area where from the street there.
Sounds like a cobblestone street. Do you think?
I'm sorry.
Oh, does it sound like a cobblestone street, or?
I don't know. I don't think he has mentioned cobblestones in other areas. And when he's talking about the stones of the gangway, I'm thinking that maybe it is something a little more solid, not cobblestones, but maybe larger stones that are part of the alleyway itself. The streets might be cobblestones, but maybe this section of alleyway is done with, you know, larger paving stones, or, you know, just something to, like, ease the transportation of goods and stuff, you know, which is generally why you'd have an alleyway. Besides separating the buildings, you'd also want to have it so that there'd be an entranceway to drag goods and supplies, like, to the backs of these establishments, rather coming in through the front. You know, if they needed to get foods in or things, they would bring them down the alleyway or have a back street entrance. And that's usually why you would have these alleyways. And the word gangway, I don't think that's really a description of the entrance to the alleyway as much as it would be like the side entrance into a building. But I don't really know how. There's really no context here to tell me anything else, really.
For Gord's attack, would you think that was a backstab or a sneak attack or something like that?
Yes, I think that the Sand distracts the thief with a dead-on attack. Mm-hmm. So Sand comes on him forward, and Sand does avoid. Of course, he's a wounded thief. So, you know, he could be down to very low hit points. And I think that it's not a backstab per se, but it is definitely sounds like a surprise flanking attack and a very good blow, almost like a critical hit in the sense that it catches him in the neck.
Yeah, it was like a surgical strike. I mean, he just like...
I will say that again here, the language that's being used, there's bits and pieces like where the knife bit meat and the man spun trying to nail his new attacker. I mean, that business of trying to nail, that is more of a 20th century turn of phrase. And again, it's kind of like we were saying, you know, is Gygax doing that on purpose to make you comfortable with the setting from a 20th century point of view, or is he just using the 20th century terminology without, you know, without intending to, and whether it's just escaping, because there's quite a bit of that here and there, like the cubicle and various idioms and turns of phrase that are mostly like early 20th century rather than anything trying to be medieval.
Yeah, well, I mean, quite often they'll throw old English words in, too, so it's a mishmash.
It is, and I think it would have done better for myself. I would have liked better some kind of, I wouldn't have enjoyed it as a farce, but I would have enjoyed it more if there was some kind of consistency, and more, not necessarily medieval or fantasy talk, but just something that was, say, a consistent approach to the setting as a kind of fantasy medieval.
Right, one way or the other.
Yeah, I mean, there is some of that stilted talk in Lieber's work, and I bring up Lieber quite a bit, because the City of Greyhawk, especially, beyond anything else in the Flaness, which tends to be generally historical areas, some of the adventures are very Lieber-esque, but in general, the City of Greyhawk, to my feel, is very much like the descriptions of Lieber's Lonkmar. And
pretty sure he grabs the Thieves Guild from Lonkmar.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of those concepts that became very, very much used in fantasy came from, you know, like Lieber. Lieber, if you do a fantasy city, a lot of them tend to be very Lieber-esque, very Lonkmar. And obviously, you know, it was a big influence to Gygax. It's mentioned in the Appendix N, Lieber's in the Early Dragon. So Lieber's, it's if you want to, besides get the atmosphere for City of Greyhawk from Gord books, the other thing I would say is a lot of the early Lieber books that are set in the city, they're very much give you the feel of what could be in a Greyhawk campaign, in a Greyhawk city campaign. And they would be worth annotating themselves, I think, because they are so, it's the way that Vance is very much the magic system. Lieber is very much the atmosphere, I feel, for the city of Greyhawk. Mm-hmm. All right, I'm going to restart right here. We are on page 52, and this is paragraph 3. Theobald, a voice hissed, recognition signal. Mercenaries had indeed done their jobs well. Gordon San here, Gord replied. One seeking escape is dead. Good work, lads, the whispered reply came. Let's take our prize and get the hell out of here. There'll be devil of an uproar hereabout soon. Beggar boys joined the three mercenaries, who were breathing hard, but otherwise unscathed, and helped them finish looting the bodies. All of the others were dead, rivermen, thieves, the lot, save the man in velvet. Somehow the fighters had managed to pummel him senseless without slaying him, although he was wounded and bleeding. It took a few moments for them to finish their stripping and rearranging. When they were done, the lads exited the passageway, followed shortly thereafter by four men. One appeared to be a drunken soldier of some sort, and the others were water folk, helping their passed-out captain back to his ship somewhere on the docks. This is the end of Chapter 5 here. I think one of the things that immediately strikes me is that the recognition is to call in out Theobald. You would think that that is perhaps a little bit too revealing, a recognition signal. And with Gord and San shouting out their own names, it also seems like they might want to hide their identities a little bit more, and that calling out Theobald might be a little too revealing as the recognition sign. We have an example here of non-lethal combat, which is very much, one of the 1E things is that you could do in combat is to knock people out or capture them. And here we see that probably the most able thief, the one in velvet who seemed to be the leader, the one with the short sword, that he, which was mentioned previously, that he is been knocked unconscious. And then at the end, it seems like that they have donned perhaps some of the clothing of the river folk that maybe covered up the velvet covering, the velvet clothing of the knocked out thief, because when they're leading them away, one appeared to be a drunken soldier, and the others waterfolk helping their passed-out captain back to the ship. And yet, the mercenaries didn't seem to have gone into the alleyway dressed in as waterfolk. So it just seems like they must have stripped the slain river captain and his two sailors, and covered up the thief. Very quick work, especially for the mercenaries to do. Very quick work there. And again, there's nothing specifically, no Greyhawk mentions, no locales, nothing except a mention of the passageway. But it gives you an idea of an encounter right here. You could have your players be either involved in or stumble into the middle of of this three-way fight going on between the rivermen, the thieves, and the counter, the beggar thieves, your characters could be stumbling right in the middle of such a fight and have to fight one side, another, or all of them all together.
Yeah, it seems like the way they come out, they're trying to mimic the group that went in, sort of.
Yes.
You know, like, yes. Nothing really happened here. Those guys went in, and those guys came out, if anybody was looking.
And disguise the fact that they've got one of the that thief with them.
Right.
You know, which would be important, because they're supposed to be taking the hostages, which kind of makes me... You know, makes it seem very strange that the recognition signal would be calling out the beggar master's name.
Yeah, but, it's not real smart.
Yeah, but you know, I mean, that is just simply, you know, it's one of the things that you have to do when you're doing adventures is realize that there's going to be a lot of stupid stuff happening as well as smart stuff. Not every one of the NPCs you're going to encounter should be, you know, should do stupid things.
Right.
All right. Well, here we are. Now, I'm going to restart. This is Chapter 6, page 53. Life aboard a gypsy barge was strange to Gord. Not that he minded the change, but it was odd. The group had managed to get through the river quarter and through the cargo gate to the wharves beyond. Instead of seeking some ship, however, they had gone up toward Shacktown and met friendly Rene Bargeman there, just what their instructions had told them to expect. Before dawn, the still unconscious thief had been bound, gagged, and rolled into an old carpet. A peddler's wagon would soon have the prize moved to a place from where he could be spirited into the beggar master's mansion. Break. All right, right here. And it was mentioned when we were in the last recording that the allies of the beggar master tended to be gypsies and peddlers and quacks and actors and jongleurs. And here we have the gypsy barge. So I'm pretty much going to assume that that previous mention of gypsy is going to be the Rene Bargeman. And they are Greyhawk fantasy version of gypsies. And there is the Atloy, who are the caravan type of gypsy, and then the Rene Bargeman, who ply their trade around the Velverdiva and the Selatan, you know, they are a gypsy form, but on the waterways. And then we also see here that, you know, the thief is bound up in a peddler's wagon. So we've got two of the allies that were mentioned that Gygax was thinking, what use could you make of them? Not really the best kind of hand-to-hand fighters you'd want to have, except perhaps the Rene. But definitely useful for getting through the city unobserved. Now, we have mention of the river quarter, and that is where this action, strip, the Wheel of Gold, I believe that all of that was supposed to take place in the river quarter. Now, the cargo gate as I remember, I don't have my City of Hawks map right here in front of me. Oh, you've got one. Now, is the cargo gate the gate from the river quarter outside of the city of Greyhawk, and is Shacktown the part of Greyhawk that is beyond the walls?
Cargo gate.
I
don't see the cargo gate listed on the map. The map that comes out of the river quarter is River Gate.
All right. And it could simply, now, in the novel here, cargo gate's capitalized, so it is one of the proper names of that gate. Now, it could simply be that it was changed to River Gate out of River Quarter, or it could be another gate. There certainly can be more than one. I have the feeling that Shacktown is outside the walls.
Definitely,
you know,
is.
By the... Yeah, Okay.
Yeah, on the City of Hawks map, it calls it the Shacks. But
yeah, Shacks, Shacktown.
Definitely again, outside of Greyhound walls.
And again, Shacktown is capitalized. So in the book, those are the proper names for both the gate and the Shacktown. And it says that the cargo gate, when you go through the cargo gate, the wharves are beyond that. So definitely, we're going out beyond the walls, out to the wharf area, and that's where you're going to find, that's where the Rene bargemen are tied up. All right, I'm going to restart. This is page 53, paragraph 2. And a prize he was indeed. Gord and his cohorts had learned from a knowledgeable barger that the fellow was none other than Ladav Norsi, great thief, swindler, con artist, and impersonator. Some said that he was a likely candidate for guildmaster one day soon. Score one for Theobald and for Gord. Break. All right, well, here we have, a major NPC. A well-known thief, should be fairly high level. So, and he is the one who is pummeled unconscious by the swordsman. So that would have been quite a fight going on there in game terms. In novel terms, it would be simply, the question of skill between however skilled the three mercenaries were compared to the various thieves that they fought. But also remember that the original fight started with the captain and his two sailor versus these thieves, and then they also get a surprise attack, the mercenaries set upon them. So they would probably be able to cut down these thieves pretty quickly in a fight. Now, the other thing is of note is that that Ladov here, he's described as a thief, swindler, con artist, and impersonator. And that really tells you, or tells me, that the kind of things that you can expect in a City of Greyhawk thief campaign, where they're not just going to be robbing and burglars, there's the swindles, the con artists, con games, and impersonations to go with the con games and such. And we see from Gord that part of his training as a beggar, off as a beggar, they are kind of impersonating beggars because they don't want to have them, the beggar thieves, to be really crippled. They want them to be able to appear crippled. And then they want them to be able to appear as members of high society, or like Gord and San are appearing just as trying to appear as young boys rather than experienced beggar thieves. So here we have, and as far as the campaign goes, we have quite a score there. But we have the introduction to a major character, if he's a likely candidate for Guildmaster of Thieves, as well as an idea of what you're going to do in a Greyhawk, City of Greyhawk campaign, and that you can do quite a lot. And it doesn't have to be that your thief is the one who is the swindler or con man or impersonator. It can be that this is what you as DM use against that the players encounter, that they're being swindled and robbed, and that they run into con man and impersonators, and that they're the trouble that may be if they resist against it and get into their own private war with the Thieves Guild. There's a lot of stuff that you can do just with the thief kind of campaign in the City of Greyhawk. All right, I'm going to restart. It is page 53, paragraph 3. Now the two boys and three sellswords were housed aboard a small fleet of barges, sheltering in a small backwater between the docks and the sprawl of Shacktown. This was now to be their base of operations. According to new instructions received by Gord from the peddler who had picked up their merchandise, when he found out that the new orders were addressed directly, page turn here, excuse me, To him, Gord was flattered and a bit flabbergasted. He was just entering his 13th spring, a guest, and was not used to being treated as anything other than a lad. Now the beggar master was having orders passed on to him as if he were an adult, an important minion of the Union at that. The deepest voice he could muster, he had told the three fighting men of the change, and they accepted his instructions without a blink. Perhaps this was because of the new dirk that swung openly from his belt in this relaxed surrounding. The trio of mercenaries did actually treat both Gord and San with some respect, not considering them equals, perhaps, but at least worthy associates with skill in their own callings. San reveled in this exalted status, and Gord felt much the same way. As befits a leader, he kept his feelings more to himself. Break. All right, now, we see that one of the mentions here is Gord's age, which is something I've been wondering about, that Gord at this point is a young 13.
And when did he come into the Beggar Guild?
He came in as a 12-year-old.
Okay, he was just turned 12, or he was close to it?
No, he was 12. I don't believe it said he had just turned 12.
Okay.
So he could be at the end of his 12-year-old. And he's been with the... all that had to have happened very quickly from the first moment when we see Gord trying to throw the rock at the rat. Goes from there to the encounter with Snaggle the headsman, to leaving and trying to get out. He goes into the foreign quarter right away, and he's immediately caught. And so his time being held before his little trial by the bailiff, and being sold by Clyde the Sharper to Theobald, that should be very short. So from the very beginning of the book, he is mentioned that he's 12-year-old, but not he's going on 13. Several months pass, and he is, now, so here we have a definite age given for him as just entering his 13th spring. It doesn't mean how long he's been 13 as much. I'm taking to mean that that means 13th spring as a seasonal thing, that this is springtime in the city of Greyhawk.
Oh, gotcha. So not his birthday.
No, but it could be 13th spring could just mean that he's just turned 13 recently. And if you look at the age of someone when they're first 13, it's their spring. And when they are going from 13 to 14, at that point, they're in their winter, you know. It could be that, or it could be that they're saying that it is spring in the city of Greyhawk. There's no context here to really pick it out.
Yeah, at that point, I think I was just so hungry for some kind of fact that I jumped and thought it was my birthday.
Yeah, and see, the thing is, there's no mention. Gord could have been going on 13 when he was sold several months. I believe at least 4 months have passed, which seems fairly quick to me.
Right.
But now Gord's supposed to be only the size of San, who's a 10-year-old. So Gord is always supposed to be a very small man. By 13, you know, he could have gotten, a certain amount of his growth in already. All right. Now we see here that Gord is able to easily move into a position of authority, not only over San, but the three hired mercenaries accept him, a very young boy, as their leader. And Gord does the best that he can here. And has a sense of what it is to be a leader, even though in the past we saw that just very recently he still wasn't quite, he was acting more in authority and mimicking like the instructor, Fergo, and some of the other adult instructors, but he still had some naivete and still lacked the same, you know, the kind of experience. But he is been made a least master in the Beggars Union. So he is doing his best to take on that role, and in this kind of warfare that's going on right now, take on a leadership role of their small little group of thieves and fighters. All right, I'm going to restart. It is page 54, paragraph 2. Rene were a puzzle to Gord. They were smallish and dark, much as he was. They seemed enthusiastic and bashful all at the same time. They spoke loudly, yet in a self-effacing manner. They were quick and very quiet when they wished to be so. They could fight and steal, Gord knew. The mercenaries showed these folks healthy respect, and Gord had heard many tales extolling their virtues as thieves. Fortunately, they were not allied to the Thieves Guild. Gord realized that they were too free-spirited and independent to accept such an arrangement. This was apparently why they had chosen to cast their lot on behalf of the Beggars Union, which was also resisting the pressure of the guild in its own distinctive way. Somehow, Gord felt, there was more to these Rene than met the eye. Without committing himself to any firm conclusion, Gord suspected that the Rene were quite unusual and something to be reckoned with. All right, well, very worth noting in this that we're getting starting to get some details on the Rene. Now, within the game itself, there's not a great deal of information on them, so it is really nice to find in the story here that we're getting a good background. We have physical description, smallish and dark, like Gord, but also we're getting a lot about their character, and you have to kind of build it up in your own mind. Now, I tend to think that a lot of, although Gygax was a study of history, I think he also based a lot of this on popular film and fiction. So I think when we look at what these, who the Rene are as gypsy folk, gypsy barge folk, that I think we can look at popular fiction of what gypsies would be, especially, Western European gypsies, as compared to what they might have been in actual historical context. They appeared to be more of a characterization like the gypsies shown in the Lon Chaney movie, The Wolfman. I have no doubt that that was something that Gygax had seen, and that I think you could go and look at that movie and other movies of that time period and get a good idea of some of the things that Gygax was thinking of when he thought of the Rene. Here we get that there are a little implication because of their alignment. If you're looking at, for gaming information, that they're too free-spirited, independent, and perhaps then they might be a little more chaotic than Loth. Yeah. I mean, that immediately... The thieves, and even the beggars, they're very organized. I mean, if you look at the beggar thieves of Theobald, that is a very, very organized little group there. And then if you look at the Thieves Guild, again, it does not seem to be like a wild, disorganized, chaotic. I mean, they are part of the structure of the city of Greyhawk, an accepted part.
Right, they fit into that hierarchy.
Yeah, so I really think that the Rene are probably more like chaotic thieves. And the thieves in the... City of Greyhawk from the Thieves Guild seem much more like, lawful thieves. It's just that if you use law and chaos about order and organization. But those are, alignment's tough because it's a very broad brush to paint what when you're trying to have characters, because people can be more than one thing. People right. can be, yeah, they can be chaotic in some ways and organized in others,
and some can be more lawful and some can be more good or evil or whatever.
And when we're dealing with that lawful concept, it's also, you know, with the gaming, the lawful has other meanings than order. You know, I mean, it's in Moorcock, it was chaos and order.
Right.
And here it's very much that there is chaotic and lawful, and it isn't quite the same mix-up right there. So, think that kind of covers what we have right here. It's very interesting. They're respected by the mercenaries as healthy respect as thieves, and also that you know, the thieves in the city of Greyhawk, I think, are respected. Mm-hmm. I think that is one of the big things, that they're an established part, and even the Renee are because they're. Maybe they aren't. They may not be respected by others in other cities that might not have the same. The Thieves Guild may not have the same influence in another city that it has in the city of Greyhawk. But right here, right off the bat, the Renee are. They are definitely a seen as a respected force, a respected culture and group in the city of Greyhawk.
In the last sentence, you get another insight into Gord, too, him being open-minded and, you know, not really judging, you know, coming up with, like, saying, oh, I know everything about these people. He thinks there's a good possibility that they might be more than, you know, what they seem on the surface. So it shows yes. something about him being flexible and, like, not knowing it all. I mean, because the hardest thing to do in the world is to teach someone who knows it all. Gord's open-minded.
And also, he's perceptive. He's got discernment. Mm-hmm. I mean, that has always been one of the things. You can see that is a quality that Gygax has pushed forward as an admirable quality. Clyde the Sharper had that discernment in being able to see in Gord. Theobald sees that in Gord. Fergo sees that in Gord. So all these people in positions of authority or power, they have that ability to discern, through the surface appearance. And then on the other hand, you see that a business that we've seen so far of being able to disguise and impersonate, that has been emphasized time and again so far within this story that Gord pretends to be sick, you know, and that shows his skill. They send them out. They're pretending to be crippled. They're pretending to be the serving boy, and Violet's pretending to be the high society courtesan. The thief, Ladov here, he is said that he's a great impersonator. So that kind
of... all dressed up in blue velvet. Like a fop, or at least appeared that way.
And then even when they drag them out, you could say they've disguised them to be to haul him out of there. They disguise him in the clothes of the river captain.
Exactly.
So far, Gygax has in this story really shown how much he sees the importance. And of course, this is a particular kind of campaign we're seeing right here, where it involves thieves and beggars and people who do things perhaps more by subterfuge than they do by direct action like the mercenaries might. But we're seeing here that if you are running a thief campaign, either running thieves or running a war against thieves or running the beggar thief war, that you should be... it is an enhancement to the campaign, I think, to follow what Gygax is pointing out here and do quite a bit about disguises and impersonations and not being able to a lot of paranoia and distrust that within the campaign that you would have informants and people are paid off. And I think that if you're running that campaign, it would really, really add to the campaign to use that idea that you need to look below the surface and look at everybody with an eye towards seeing what they really were and keep an eye out for their actions. And that, I think, would be a great benefit in running a kind of campaign like this. All right. I am going to restart. We're on page 54, and this is the last paragraph. If the men were interesting and capable, their women folk were doubly so. Girls were mostly breathtaking in appearance and bold in behavior, to a point. But the elder females seemed to be something mystical, a cross between seer, witch, and clerical matriarch. The young women deferred to the men with respect and downcast eyes, while the old women were deferred to, in turn, by the toughest of the men. Their circle appealed to Gord. He'd happily have a lovely and submissive concubine, while seeking guidance and wisdom for his actions from a grand matron. But then Gord was young and understood little of life. Break. All right, well, again, and I think this is good to address a little separately here. We have more about the Rene, and this is a really distinctive thing to talk about their society, because we have the young women, beautiful and bold in a certain ways, and yet respectful to the men in the society. But once they've attained a certain level of age or power, then those young women, at least to what Gord sees, they are a cross between seer, witch, and clerical matriarch. So the Rene women seem to have a magical society among the women folk, while the men are more of the brash and the thieves and. But again, even the younger girls, I believe, they may be thieves as well. But here, it adds a little something to the character of the Rene, and the fact that in the campaign, you can really look toward that magical and it is magical clerical ability with divination. Which would be magical and a clerical matriarch. So we could come up with a Rene character where the women tended to be the magic users and the men tended to be the thief or fighters, or even where the younger women are kind of a combination thereof. But you notice that it is not the men who seem to have the magical. All right, restarting. This is page 55, paragraph 2. And they weren't making excursions into the city. All five of the beggar master's agents were dressed as barge folk. Brightly garbed in satins and gaudy accessories, they moved freely among the 24 interconnected barges. No watcher would suspect that they were anything other than Rene. I had been here for more than a sennight now, and three other trips to the Strip and neighboring districts had netted them little in the way of hostages for Theobald. Several dead thieves could be credited to their activity, however, and all of them had acquired a fair amount of spoils from their efforts on behalf of the cause. All right. Again, I think that while we get a little more information about the beggar-thief war and what's been going on, we have a little more about the Rene here because we have a description of their dress, brightly garbed in satins and gaudy accessories. And we also have a little bit about how there's 24 interconnected barges. So we have how the... not only that there's a good number of Rene right here, in this one area, I don't know if this is all of the Rene bargemen in the city of Greyhawk, whether they all come together or whether this is one family group and they have other family groups. I don't know. There's not enough context here, but it does tell you that what they do is that they do lash their barges together, that they have their own little enclave within the wharves and the docks of the city of Greyhawk. We are told here that Gord and his little band have been reasonably successful. They doesn't mention any casualties, but it does say that they're moving beyond the strip and neighboring districts. Now, when they say neighboring districts, it may be that districts is used to talk about areas within the river quarter where the strip is, or it could be that districts are actually other quarters. I'm not quite sure. There's still, again, you have to do a lot of how this makes you feel, because there's a lot of context that just is not there.
The strip is pretty small.
All right.
And it separates the river quarter from the low quarter.
All right. Like I said, I don't have the City of Hawks map, and I would say everything that we're describing out of this book, it should really have had the City of Hawks map right there at the beginning. There's an area map, because we do get beyond it, but any book called Saga of Old City should really have the old Gygax's City of Hawks map to show you what we're talking about. And what we are talking about does match point for point with that map.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm confident that we are using the map for the City of Hawks. And it is much different from the City of Greyhawk box set map. They're really two different things.
Yeah, it said they did 3 raids in a week. A Sennite.
Yes, now, a Sennite, yes. I don't
have to look
have
that up. No, I looked it up, yeah. And it means 7 nights.
Oh, okay. So, I mean, that's all good to know. Because there's no context, again, for what the Sennite is.
Yeah, it's a real word.
Oh, is it?
Yeah,
oh,
it's, okay. It's in the normal dictionary.
I hadn't known that.
One that I actually had to stop for. I was like, I don't know it. I can't approximate it. It's time. I was thinking maybe it was like a fortnight. Maybe it was more than a fortnight, but it's less.
Yeah. It's less. It's just a regular week.
That's 7. So. Yep.
Yeah. 7 days, Sennite.
And 3 trips. So they're fairly active. Like every other day, they're doing so.
Yes. And obviously, we aren't given any more action descriptions right here. But we are told that there's several dead thieves, and Gord is collecting spoils. So they seem to be doing personally very well, which is Gord's attitude toward this entire venture. If from the previous recording there was a mention in an earlier paragraph with Gord talking to Sam that he is looking to get out of what he can for himself. And does not have like a big belief in the viability of this beggar thief war that's going on. All right, I am going to restart here. It is page 55, paragraph 3. Gord had the feeling that their luck would not hold for much longer, and he had begun to yearn for a change of scenery. Although staying on the barges was interesting and exciting, and this had certainly proved to be an effective base from which to carry out further raids on the thieves, he was eager to get back to find out what was happening in the thieves' quarter. Besides, he had a fair stash of coins hidden there, a score to settle with Theobald. Gord was feeling confident now that he would somehow be able not only to get revenge on the dirty, fat bastard who had slain Violet, also to profit big in the process. He was willing to trade his independence on the fringe of things for the chance to again be in the heart of the action, even if that meant being at someone else's beck and call. Anyway, he had promised a young girl named Adaz that he would go with her to the waters of the near Dev one day soon, and he really believed deep inside that his fate would eventually return him to the René. Now it was time for other activities, however. "What's the matter, Gord?" San inquired forcefully. Gord was becoming irritable and restless. He'd just told his partner to bugger off for the third time in about 15 minutes, and San was having no more of it. "Oh, crap, it isn't your fault, San. Sorry, this just isn't right." Break. You know, I'm stopping here. We've covered a little bit of stuff here. I mean, mostly what we see here is the motivations that Gord has that have already been expressed, like I was saying. Now, this feeling that his luck wasn't going to hold, and I just think that means that he figures that kind of goes back to where I was saying that they've done these various attacks against the thieves and don't seem to have suffered any casualties so far. So it should still be the five of them, Gordon, Sand, the two beggar thieves, and the three sellsword mercenaries. Now, something that comes up here is that, again, he wants to get back to the thieves' quarter. Now, I'm not sure, but I thought there was also a beggar's quarter.
There is.
All right. But when we're first told about Theobald's mansion, when they come from the workhouse, it seemed to say that it was inside the thieves' quarter. And that could very well be. I mean, the mansion might be in the thieves' quarter, and yet there is a beggar quarter. Because one of the things to note was that while there were several dozen beggar thieves being trained in the mansion, there were also many, many thieves, many beggars that were outside of the mansion who were not being trained as beggar thieves, and that they had a more, they were members of the beggars' union, but they weren't there working directly for Theobald and turning in all their coin and all their, everything they earned directly over to him, and seemed to be more having to live by their own skills and at begging or stealing.
Right, not all of them came home for dinner every night.
Yes, but the and even within the mansion, there were the beggars who went out, came back, and you know, turned in their coin and earnings, and then there were the beggar thieves who would only go out twice a week for experience, and more complicated it seemed, doing disguises and more complex operations that they were doing. In their and learning and getting practical experience that would be reinforced by their training.
And this stuff, we're reminded that Gord cares about people other than himself too.
Yes, I mean, so far Gord is the only reasonably neutral or neutral good character. Perhaps Sian. There was also Hadi, the 7 or 8 year old who Gord likes. Who's one of the young, but he's also, that Hadi is also one of the elite beggar thieves. Now, here Gord, you know, wants revenge over Violet, and still hates Theobald. He's got his eyes on practical things about making some profit as well. But here we see again at the end is Gord's youth, and probably what you'd say is naivete, where he's... he's got a making promises to Adaz, who I assume is a René, and that he's going with her to the waters of the Near Div. And that tells you, if she is René, that that is another place that these René, who are in the city of Greyhawk, are they're going to be taking their you know, their barges out from the rivers into the Near Div. And a sense... you know, of Gord's feeling, I think, of connection to the René, where he believes his fate would eventually return him to René. I think that shows there that he's already formed. He mentions how that they're small and dark like he is, and he's this orphan boy, and I think he's already feeling some kind of connection to the René right here.
And he's looking for that.
Yeah. And, I mean... there's a lot of things in these books, and I think that's one right here. Getting close to 7, I'm going to try to get through the next paragraph or paragraphs. So I'm going to restart right here, and it is page 55, last paragraph. Hell yes, it's right, Sand shot back truculently. He was thoroughly enjoying the freedom and independence of their present position. Gord shook his head and explained. Beggar Master is a good tactician, that's the word. He's a bad strategist, spreading everyone around Greyhawk, putting us here to operate against the Strip. It's smart, it's paid off. So what's wrong? You're arguing with yourself. Ah, San, the action is going to shift. Beggar Master Fatty has made the big mistake. I don't think the Guild will ever allow itself to be flummoxed just because Theobald has kidnapped a handful of its members. Big shots or not, the Guild has to beat Theobald and destroy the Union, or the thieves are through. I want to be around Theobald when that happens. I want to be there when that rotten scum gets what's coming to him, or do it myself. Sam shivered a little at the vehemence of Gord's statement and made no reply. Break. All right. Now, we get Gord to the point where to San he's disrespecting the Beggar Master to where he's calling him Bugger Master Fatty. But we also have the, this really goes, it covers both the Guild, the Thieves Guild Beggar Union War, because Gord's explaining why he doesn't believe that the Union can win, and how the thieves must now, at this point, destroy the Beggars Union. But we also get this thing where, in the short months, where would Gord have started to learn the concepts of tactician and strategist, except from the instructors like Fergo, or Theobald himself, and there are other instructors. But
it's the other masters.
The other masters and instructors, and it's it shows, here's 13-year-old Gord absorbing. Here we see his intelligence. He's got his physical skills, his dexterity. He's a contortionist. He's a good thief. But he's also got his intelligence. So Gord, we're being shown, is very exceptionally able. So for showing how Gord is developing, we see a lot right here. But we also see the flaws in Theobald, and eventually what is foreshadowing we can pretty much are meant to assume that Gord is in the right here, at least on his estimations of what is to come, and perhaps a turn in their own luck right here as the thieves, step up their attacks and their defenses against the beggar thieves. All right. Well, we are in the middle of chapter 6. It is time for me to close up. It's 6:58. So this should be the end of that recording. Keep in mind that recordings number 1 to 6 are now archived on the Cannon Fire website. I've heard that there might be some problems with a download, but they definitely work to listen to them there.
Yeah, Gary addressed that he got back to me today and acknowledged what I saw because they download as text files, but they're actually M4A files. And he wrote that on top of the page.
All right. Now, well, night, everyone, and I'm going to log off. I'm going to end the recording right here.